Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. A crowd estimated into the hundreds of thousands is marching on Washington at this hour on President Donald Trump's first day on the job. The Women's March was organized following the election. Filmmaker Michael Moore is among the speakers addressing the crowd.
So I woke up this morning, picked up the Washington Post, and the headline read, Trump takes power. New president vows to end American carnage. Mr. Trump, we are here to vow to end the Trump carnage.
Women's marches are taking place in several major U.S. cities with the theme of unifying their voice over concerns about comments Mr. Trump made during the campaign and other civil rights issues. People around the world, including in Britain, are showing solidarity with demonstrators here in the U.S.
I think we can have a big impact. I think it's really important that the women in the U.S. know that we're behind them, that not just in the U.K., but there are marches all over the world. And the really important thing is that women's rights and all the freedoms, the LGBT rights and all the freedoms that we've built up over generations have to be not just retained but expanded, and it looks very much as if Trump's administration will not do that.
Allison Smith is an organizer of the Women's March in London. A spokesman for U.S. President Donald Trump says he will spend part of his first full day in office visiting the Central Intelligence Agency, one of the number of agencies he has been at odds with in the past over claims about Russia election hacking. Trump also accused the CIA of leaking documents containing unsubstantiated compromising information about him, allegedly collected by Russia. This is VOA News. Newly elected Gambian President Adama Barrow posted on Twitter Saturday that he will return to his homeland and assume power now that defeated leader Yahya Jammeh has agreed to step down and leave the country. Jammeh, who is expected to leave for Guinea within hours, agreed Friday to peacefully hand over power to Barrow, who is waiting in neighboring Senegal for safety reasons. Jammeh's departure ends a political standoff that came to the brink of a military intervention by Western African forces. The United Nations is appealing for $550 million in humanitarian assistance this year to meet the needs of Afghans affected by conflict, with natural disaster, and for those returning home from neighboring countries. The UN humanitarian coordinator, Mark Bowden, launched the appeal in Kabul Saturday.
With the exception of Syria, there have been no other movements of this scale, and that is why I want to reemphasize that Afghanistan faces exceptional needs that require an exceptional international response.
Bowden said an estimated 1 million Afghans have returned home from neighboring Pakistan and Iran in the last year, while more than 600,000 people fled their homes internally due to the conflict. The UN Children's Fund warns freezing temperatures across Europe are putting thousands of young refugee and migrant children at risk of illness and death. Lisa Schlein reports from the UN in Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund estimates 23,700 refugee and migrant children, including infants and newborns, are stranded in Greece and the Balkans. It says many of the children, who mainly come from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, are living in unheated shelters that cannot protect them from the winter cold. UNICEF spokeswoman Sarah Crow tells VOA that people on land face other life-threatening illnesses,
like pneumonia, acute respiratory infections that are exacerbated in overcrowded conditions.
UNICEF is calling on Greek authorities to move refugees and migrants currently living in overcrowded and underserviced camps on the islands to more appropriate accommodations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A bomb ripped through a market area in northwest Pakistan today, killing at least 20 people and wounding more than 40 others. A spokesman for the anti-state Pakistan Taliban has claimed responsibility for what he said was a suicide attack to avenge killings of its jailed members and allegedly fake police encounters. The Turkish parliament has approved a constitutional reform package that would strengthen the powers of the presidency, could keep President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in office until 2029. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
One thing about the Trump administration is that really there has not been any coherent policy on anything. So we have to wait and see how things are developing.
Africans wonder what relationship Washington would have with the continent following the installation of President Trump.
Next for me is to continue to serve my country. President Jammeh is one person, and the Gambia is bigger than him and all of us. So for him not to ask me to continue to work for him, that's fine. That's his prerogative.
Former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh agrees to step down and hand over power.
Our approach is a win-win situation. The present status quo, which involves the monarchy, we are saying the monarchy has a place in our future history.
And Swaziland's opposition party plans to intensify demands for democratic reforms. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Donald Trump, sworn in Friday as the 45th U.S. president, used his inaugural address to tell the several hundred thousand people who gathered on the National Mall to watch him take the oath of office that he was going to put America and American workers first. But meanwhile, Africans here and elsewhere have been wondering what the new administration's policy towards Africa would be. For analysis, I reached Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
At this stage, it is difficult to know what is the real intentions of President Trump. When you look at the address he made at the inauguration, it's in a way somewhat frightening because it is a nationalist speech. It talks about America being America first. It seems to suggest that America is not going to be too concerned as to what happens outside the borders of the United States. He also suggested that major powers should pursue their national interest, thereby suggesting that the issue of promotion of human rights and good governance may not be part of his major concern.
Well, the issues of conflict and the promotion of democracy on the continent, some say, is of a concern since we just witnessed what happened in the Gambia, and they expect the United States, which has been able to promote democracy on the continent, that could suffer greatly. Do you share that sentiment?
Yes, I think at this stage, one thing about the Trump administration is that really there has not been any coherent policy on anything. So we have to wait and see how things are developing. But I think one can say, when one listens to the address, that the president's focus will be solely on America. He had made it very clear. So the idea of promoting democracy, human rights, economic development, I don't think will be part of his major concern. He wants to use American funds in America, as he said, to elevate suffering and the issue of development in many of the inner cities of the United States. So I really don't think he is really going to focus on Africa. Of course, that would be very realistic. Developments might force his hands. And also the fact that there are other powers who are interested in Africa, for example, China. One wants to see whether President Trump will stand idly by if China is promoting a robust policy in Africa and winning friends. We will have to see.
President Trump's supporters are saying that he deserves to focus solely on America because there are so many issues average Joes, as they say, have been left behind or feel left behind. As such, that is why he was given the mandate to administer the affairs of this country. And some also argue that even President Obama, who is a first-generation African-American in this country, didn't do or meet expectations of Africans during his eight-year presidency. What do you say to that?
Well, the one thing which one has to take into account is this. American policy in Africa is not just charity. People tend to forget that Africa is a very wealthy continent. There are a lot of industries, minerals, which are essential to the security, not only of the United States, but of the West. Does America want these crucial minerals to be the sole concern of other powers or to be denied to American industries? I don't believe that. I think there is some kind of a naive view that this is just charity and charity. No, it's in American interest. Just imagine if there becomes a problem between Africa and America and these crucial minerals are denied to the United States industries. What will happen? So I really don't, I think that is just quite often, to my, in my own view, very, very naive. We don't see now, for example, who is going to be appointed as the Assistant Secretary for African Affairs in the United States. We don't know yet. So I think we have to wait and see. But I think, if I understand the president very well, his Weltanschauung doesn't relate to Africa at this stage. I think the problem with Obama, with many African analysts, is they were unrealistic. Obama was elected by the American people to be the president of the United States, not the president of Africa. And there are certain constraints which affect any president who is in over office. So I think there was an unrealistic expectation. I think he did a lot as he could, but not what the unrealistic analysts expect from the president.
Dr. James Jonah is the former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. He spoke with me from New York. Sheikh Omar Faye is the first Gambian ambassador to officially call on Yahya Jammeh to step down and hand over power to newly installed President Adama Barrow. His call, which was followed by 11 other top Gambian envoys, led to Jammeh's decision to fire them. Yahya Jammeh has since announced he will step down following military and diplomatic pressure from regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS. I caught up with former Gambian ambassador to Washington, Faye, who was at the VOA studios here in Washington.
Next for me is to continue to serve my country. President Jammeh is one person, and the Gambia is bigger than him and all of us. So for him not to ask me to continue to work for him, that's fine. That's his prerogative. But that's will not stop me from serving my beloved country.
You said you're serving in your country, Gambia. In what capacity in this instance?
Well, it depends on wherever I feel. I mean, the coalition and the incoming government may need my services in some areas. I also have the choice to go do something else. I am fairly an experienced person, and the wall is an open wall. I can give my experience and my services to whoever may need it. Gambia, at the regional level, at the world level, so that's no big deal. I mean,
what do you say to critics who say that you served in various capacities in the Jammeh administration for the last 22 or so years, and that you betrayed him by calling on him to step down when he had cited some instances of voter irregularities to challenge the credibility or to challenge the election in the court?
It is always good. I'm a strong believer in allowing people to put in their opinions and the way they say things. Betrayal, there's nothing like betraying. It's just calling it as it is. The Gambian people have spoken, and I cited with the will of the Gambian people. Some people may think betrayal, but between myself, my conscience, and between me and my God, nothing like betrayal. If it was right, I will follow him. I will never follow anybody who is going on the wrong path, I can tell you.
Is your life in danger if you were to return to the Gambia within the next few months, considering what is happening in the country? Will you go back, or will your family back home be in jeopardy?
I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't think so. Gambia is my country. I love that country. And nobody can stop me from going to the Gambia. Remember, my great-grandparents were in Gambia, my grandparents, my dad, my everybody. So nobody can stop me. And also remember, I'm a retired company commander. I mean, I'm just not a civilian like that. And if anybody wants to challenge me, you will find that I'm ready for you. So, but we don't want to go that route. We want to be peaceful, and nobody can stop me from going back to my motherland.
Why did you call on President Jammeh to step down? You are one of the few people who, you know, led the way.
Because I cannot condone seeing wrong, and I'm not going to go that way. I told you, I've just celebrated 57. I've been in this world for a while, and I believe in Islam. There are things that I believe in, and I'm not going to follow anybody. Even if he asked me to be vice president, and if he's wrong, I'm not going to do it. That's just the way. I want to go to bed, my friend, and respect the will of the Gambian people. I don't care what office I've got, what opportunities I've got. Let them wait. I want to stay with the truth. I want to go in and make sure that the Gambians are respected, democracy is respected, the will of the people is respected. He's been there for 22 years. I've supported him. They asked me to go to the Gambia a month after he made the coup. So if it were an opportunity, but I stayed in America for almost 12 years before going back. I'm not a person who follows those things about opportunities. No, I don't know about that. I know about national service, national duty, and be honest to myself and to be honest to my people.
What are your views about the stance taken by the regional bloc, ECOWAS, and for that matter, the continental body?
If the ECOWAS or AU don't do what they're doing right now, it's going to be a mockery of democracy in Africa. And anybody can jump up and lose an election and say, no, I've not lost. And anybody can get up and do whatever they want. So ECOWAS are doing the right thing. We belong to that regional body. AU are doing the right thing. God forbid, we don't want any bloodshed, but we need people for check and balances. You cannot just allow people to be presidents or ministers or just doing whatever they want. Otherwise, the world will be the jungle, the war of the fittest, that anybody can jump to anybody. So what they're doing is the right thing, and I think it's been applauded by Gambians, by West African, by Africans at large, in fact, to the United Nations at whole. You have to respect your people. You have to respect democracy, and then you have to do the right thing.
What do you say to folks who are saying this is purely an ethnic tension? Because they said neighboring Senegal President Macky Sall belongs to one group that the president-elect belongs to, and Yahya Jammeh belongs to another ethnic group, and that has brought to a head what we are seeing now. What do you see as this ethnic card being played?
President Jammeh did some very strategic errors. He's done some dangerous things in the Gambia. He has really said bad things about the Mandingo. That is a very scary situation and statements that he has done. And I think in the Gambia, we don't have problems of tribe. It's a small area and we are too much related. I have nephews and nieces who are Mandingos. I have cousins who are Fulas. And I'm sure President Jammeh also has relatives that are Mandingos. But he said some very, very nasty statements on the Mandingos before the elections. In fact, that's contributed to his losing the elections, because really, Mandingos are the majority tribe in the Gambia.
Sheikh Omar Faye is the former Gambian ambassador to the United States. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Swaziland's banned political opposition group Podemo plans to intensify efforts for a negotiated settlement with King Eswatini III and his administration in Mbabane for democratic reforms in the southern African kingdom. Imfandlana Shongwe, deputy general secretary of the group, says Podemo is implementing new measures to build up its structures across the country in readiness to challenge what he says is the status quo. Earlier, I reached Shongwe in the Swazi commercial capital Manzini about his group's plans to demand more democratic reforms in Swaziland.
We are trying to intensify that process of getting a negotiated settlement, because our approach to the Swazi question is that one of finding a negotiated settlement. But our approach is a win-win situation. The present status quo, which involves the monarchy, we are saying the monarchy has a place in our future history, but not in the format it is now. We are saying monarch and multi-party democracy, so to say, can coexist side by side. So that is what we are pressurizing to happen.
You talked about restructuring the party structures. However, how do you do this under the pressure from the government that has banned the organization, in some cases described it as a terrorist organization? How effective can you be in restructuring these structures that Podemo plans to implement across the country?
We've been operating under these harsh conditions, under these tough conditions. But since 2008, that harsh condition was even doubled through the Suppression of Terrorism Act. However, what we are seeing presently, we are seeing a tired government. We are seeing a government that can no longer afford to shut us out. We are seeing a government that is actually also caged up. To my understanding, they would also like a negotiated settlement, more especially because the international community, including the Commonwealth especially, and the EU, is quite more concerned this time than before to have a solution found for this country. So it is correct that it is difficult to work on the ground, but we are penetrating the ground on defiance through defiance campaigns. But one thing that is also working to our advantage is the conditions on the ground, the drought, the unemployment issue. People are fed up on daily basis on this issue.
You talked about the issue of jobs. Economic situation in the country seemed not to be favorable to a lot of people. So what plans do you have to convince Swazis that you have a better idea or you have a better plan to improve or jumpstart the economy to provide jobs for the people?
Right now, the European Union is threatening to pull out of the country. If they can pull out, they can leave quite a thousands of people jobless. And we are saying to the people, no. We must not allow a situation where this can happen. You are aware that a year has gone by without the AGOA. And we are saying, unless the government changes, we will continue to lose jobs. So this is appealing to the people. We are saying, if democracy is embraced in this country, we stand to gain, we stand to attract more investors to the country.
What about the issue of education in Swaziland? And have you approached the government to talk about ways to meet some of your concerns or come up with a review of the education system to meet international standards as you demanded?
You see, the issue of education is one issue that is presently a hot potato, especially because the standard of education has drastically dropped. If I can tell you that in one school, 196 people failed. In another school, 95 students failed. A school just next to the King's Palace failed. So we are saying the reason why the standard of education is going down, it is because government is not serious about this. One, there's shortage of teachers, there's shortage of classes, there's shortage of implements in the schools. If we want to uplift the standard of education, we must have adequate facilities, from teachers to a lot of issues that ranges to, you know, students go to school hungry. Students go to school in empty stomachs. Students don't learn under trees.
Imfandlana Shongwe is the Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland's banned political opposition group, PODEMO. He spoke with me from Manzini. Protesters gathered in Washington and other U.S. cities the day after Donald Trump was sworn in as the U.S. president. Marches are also being held in other nations around the world. Like the demonstration in the U.S. Capitol, many of those protests were sparked by concern over women's rights, other civil rights, and environmental issues as Trump begins his term. A short while ago, I spoke with VOA's Esha Sarai, who is covering the march.
You know, people who are out here for a really wide number of causes. I think it was inspired by, you know, our president, Donald Trump, has been accused of saying things that are sexist or maybe offensive to women. And I believe that's where it began. But it has really just turned into a march of all kinds of human rights they're espousing. A lot of signs out here say women's rights are human rights. It's not just about the female body, but also, you know, opposing Trump in general, the immigrant rights, Black Lives Matter. There are all kinds of causes out here. But I think the significance is really just that there are this many who oppose Donald Trump and who are against a lot of the things that he campaigned for.
Some are saying that the protest itself has no significance since President Trump was inaugurated yesterday or officially installed yesterday as the president of the United States of America. So the protest is just a non-starter in the first place. How is the reaction there on the National Mall?
Well, you know, from the people that I've talked to out here, it's quite different than the protests we saw yesterday, who actually had the object of disrupting the inauguration. But I think out here, you know, these people respect democracy. They understand that Trump was elected president for the most part. And they're really just here to express their opinions and make sure that the new administration, the new Congress, knows that these are issues that people care about and knows that these are issues they won't be silent on, depending on how, you know, what executive orders Trump might sign in the coming weeks.
Did they say what their main objective is, since it appears that other continents have following suit, protesting in countries including Mexico, just across the border from here?
Of course, you know, Mexico, given the whole wall rhetoric and a lot of comments that Donald Trump has made about Mexicans, particularly immigrants in the States, I suppose they have their own reasons for marching. I can't speak to protests across the world, but what I can glean from what I've seen here is that this is really a time in history for women to come up and say, you know, it may be 2016, but we still don't feel like we're adequately represented, we're adequately protected. And I think that that's a rhetoric that that's being felt around the world, and a lot of women around the world are inspired to really stand up for the same thing.
How has been the attendance so far that you've seen?
It is by far the most people I have ever seen in Washington. It's definitely bigger than yesterday. Rough estimates for right now, maybe around 500,000. Of course, I can't say that with much authority, but the streets are full. They start. So we've seen people as far back as 2nd and Independence. I'm currently on 9th and Independence, 7 blocks down, and it's completely full and, you know, going on as far as the eye can see, really, from every direction.
Listening to people and the speakers, did they say this will turn into a movement for the next 4 or so years?
I haven't heard any of that yet. The speakers have really just begun, so I can't speak to that. But I imagine that, you know, the point of today is, like I said before, is to show that all these people are still here and they won't stop fighting. So I imagine that this is going to lead to a lot of action, a lot of nonprofits, a lot of sending letters to senators.
What's the mood at the march right now?
It's definitely positive. It's cheerful. I haven't really seen anyone angry. Very peaceful right now. I mean, a lot of families. I've seen a lot of children, a lot of families who are coming and reuniting from across the states at this march.
Yesterday, some people expressed concern about today's march because of the protests that turned violent during the inauguration of President Trump. Do you think the concerns are justified right now?
You know, it's really hard to say. Everyone that I've spoken to, you know, everything that's been said about the march before it happened was definitely promoting peace. They weren't endorsing the protests that happened yesterday, particularly, you know, the few windows that were broken and the fire. But this is a very large amount of people, and I think the people with different ideas of protests who were here yesterday will be on the streets today, so it's hard to say.
Thank you very much, Isha, for speaking with us. That was VOA's Isha Saraya covering the ongoing Women's March right here in Washington, D.C. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's time for music from our African collection.
Follow me. We dey follow our mentor, and my sin to party. follow me. Forever with the leader, say we talking a leader, child. Follow me, cause we bad at the sing and the raga leaders and they follow me. Can follow me on Twitter, say Facebook and Instagram, say we get up. From Salon to Nigeria, in the Qatar, we discover your area. Mama blessing you, Oko. If the money you want, follow it. Like you make with the pen, follow it. With the map with the sun, follow it.
Follow me, neighbor, corner, corner, everybody, hey, she follow me, me body, me jamsi, auntie, follow me, she follow me, she follow me, hey, follow me, she follow me, she follow me, she follow me, hey, follow me. If the money you want, follow me, I give me good friend, follow me, with the Mac with the song, follow me.
Feeling in my heart, feeling feeling in my soul, feeling in my body and feeling in my head too. Oh yeah, baby, come to be fishy. She did dance, oh face, oh yeah, she come for me, oh face, nine, 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 nine. Hey, I say, freestyle something, just enter inside studio, just to hear the beat, they bust my brain. I don't feel up myself, make I flow on it, and as you do like so, you be like, say, Nanito, hey, I'm in on the beat, oh, 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 oh. There's something about you, I just can't say. Feeling in my heart, it busts my head. Oh baby, oh tell me what you say, what you say, what you say. Are the crazy, are the maga, oh yeah, what you get?
Feeling in my heart, feeling in my soul, feeling in my body and feeling in my head. Oh baby, come to be your fish.
Show. Me, she pulled no one on show. Yeah, man.
Young
Lee
on the
beat. Anena na 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 na. Na Akman again. I just want to call you when you call. I just think of you when you call. I just want you picture. All me heart you capture. I just remember all the good times when we spent together when you call. Yanda na mi dede. Anytime you go, I go dede. So take go, baby. Me and you, me and you. When I come back home, baby, hey, me and you. Now me and you, only you. When I come back home, baby, hey, me and you. If I defend Nana Bacha, now me and you. If I defend Nana Swazi, now me and you. If I defend and dunk na beja
now for me and you.
Even if I deserve na be office
now for me and you.
Under rain, under sun, every minute and hour I defend now for me and you. Say for better or for worse, still there do us, but there be love, say na me and you. Na me and you, me and you. When I come back home, baby, hey, na me and you. Na me and you. Only you. When I come back home, baby, hey, I me and you. If I defend Nana Bacha,
I me and you.
If I defend Nana Swazi,
I me and you.
If I defend and dunk na Beja,
for me and you.
Even if I deserve na be office,
for me and you.
Let go. Come back and hold me now. Baby, I love you now. Yeah, man. Na 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 eh. Na Akman again. Under rain, under sun, every minute and hour, I defend them for me and you. Say for better or for worse, still there to us, but there be love, say na me and you. Na me and you. Me and you. When I come back home, baby, hey, na me and you. Na me and you. Only you. When I come back home, baby, hey, na me and you. Chanel. Papa Boo. Ah. Young Lee, you na taga taga.
Sugar medicine,
medicine, yeah.
It's Mastercraft on the beach, just
slow. Wine by me, slow.
I didn't like you as
slow. This the
way
by me, slow.
You didn't make a joke, no job lie.
Climb by me, slow.
Not the way you didn't like you as you didn't do this
by me, slow.
Leave your fingerprints all over my body. I no go wipe.
I no go wipe.
Your kiss on my lips and onto my
yes.
Me out of life.
Yes, I like.
You don't mess me, rise me strongly. I don't lose my attention. Now you the bumping grind and wrap your hands around me like octopus. I'm gonna get me, I like your ginger.
Ginger, ginger.
Mastercraft, wicked and white. Golden finger. But if they ask, oh, now who be this sing? This is this sing. It's Emma Sin, they call me sugar medicine.
So no fear to climb by me.
Climb by me. I didn't like you when you did this
thing. Climb by me.
You make a joke, no job lie.
Climb by me.
You know the way you didn't like you when you did this thing.
Climb by me.
Tonight, temperature rise, 400 Fahrenheit, baby, turn down the light, it's a new fight, so have no mercy on me, your rage on me, oh, I owe me, take over me, your mugge me, my land and me, make me your maga, my body, I don't surrender, hey, before you
descend on me. It should be my commander. Me and you against the world. Turn it down, turn the light down. Down, 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 down.
Why you bounce?
Anybody call, I dey beg you, I don't turn off my light, no, let them call me one day after, cause this no be 10 minutes matter, everybody, yeah, as you body dey, yeah, 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 what you better, malanemi, malanemi, oh, why, 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 you dey make a dey sing, a dey sing, a dey dance, a job, blow, job, like, you dey make a dey sing in my head, a ring, the rap, like,
Mami, dance for me, 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 m
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the chameleon changes color to match the earth. The earth doesn't change colors to match the chameleon. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Substantial regions of Africa's Lake Chad Basin, particularly northeastern Nigeria, are at risk of facing famine. At least two locations likely already experienced famine last year. Lake Chad shrinking, years of poor harvests, and a limping economy have contributed to the crisis. But the primary reason is the violence and destruction caused by the terror group Boko Haram. Its attacks on the civilian population, the armed conflict with the Nigerian and regional militaries, and the resulting destruction of civilian infrastructure. In Nigeria, the Boko Haram insurgency has caused the deaths of some 20,000 people over the past 7 years, abducted thousands from their schools and homes, and practically stopped all agricultural production. It is responsible for the current displacement of 1.63 million people from their homes within Nigeria, where hundreds of thousands are cut off from assistance. The conditions are worst in Nigeria's states of Adamawa, Yobe, and Borno, areas where Boko Haram is most active. According to a recent United Nations analysis, some 8.5 million people there are in urgent need of humanitarian aid. In Borno state alone, 3.2 million people out of a population of 5.5 million are facing severe food insecurity. The UN estimated that 55,000 people faced famine in 2016, and that number could climb to 120,000 by the summer. Around 400,000 children under the age of 5 are severely malnourished, and UNICEF fears that number will also rise to 450,000. To help mitigate this crisis of food insecurity, the United Nations has put out a call for international donations to meet the humanitarian needs of the people of northeastern Nigeria. The 2017 Humanitarian Response Plan, Appeal for Nigeria, a fundraising effort coordinated by the United Nations, is for well over $1 billion. However, if these urgent needs are not addressed quickly, the required budget will grow. Considering that the 2016 Nigeria appeal for $484 million is less than half funded, the prospects for raising a sum of $1 billion will be very challenging. The United States has already committed $92 million in the first quarter of the 2017 fiscal year, bringing the total amount for fiscal years 2016 and 2017 to $291 million. This has become one of the world's greatest overlooked crises. We call on other donors to move quickly in providing humanitarian funding for the millions of people in the region whose lives have been affected by Boko Haram violence and to avert likely famine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.